News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Previewing his meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, President Trump suggested that Russia and Ukraine may swap territory to end the war. Ukraine's leaders now speaking up, says ABC's Selena Wang.
Ukraine's Zelensky rejecting the suggestion of swapping territory, saying in a statement overnight, Ukraine is ready for real solutions that can bring peace. Any solutions that are against us, any solutions that are without Ukraine, are at the same time solutions against peace. Critics calling the summit a gift to Putin, accusing him of stalling as the war drags on.
The Trump-Putin meeting will take place Friday in Alaska. No motive yet has been released for the man who authorities say opened fire outside of CDC headquarters in Atlanta Friday. A DeKalb County, Georgia police officer was killed. The man has been identified as a 30-year-old suburban Atlanta resident who was found dead at the scene. This is ABC News. The meat plant that was at the heart of last year's deadly food poisoning outbreak is set to reopen in a few months, even though the company behind it is still seeing problems elsewhere, says ABC's Sherry Preston.
The USDA suspended operations at the Boar's Head deli meat plant in Jarrett, Virginia last September after an inspection showed it was at the heart of dozens of illnesses and at least 10 deaths due to listeria. Ag officials said they had thoroughly reviewed the plant and on July 18th gave it the okay to reopen. However, an AP investigation found that Boar's Head plants in Arkansas, Indiana, and other states had been flagged for the same kinds of unsanitary conditions, some as recently as June.
It's ABC's Sherry Preston. The Associated Press reports that authorities in Louisiana will pay $9 million to a man who was partially paralyzed from the waist down after he was shot in the back by a state trooper during a traffic stop in 2018. The trooper who shot Clifton Scotty Dilley was fired. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Matt and Air on Air.
Here's my gripe. MTV made it possible for really subpar performers to become stars. Madonna would never have been a star if it hadn't been for MTV and her grinding her way across the floor in a wedding dress.
See, that's where I think your gripe isn't with MTV. I think your gripe is with Madonna grinding on MTV.
Thank you, Matt from Richland Center. How dare you, Jane?
Matt and Air on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety.
CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers. Through CPR education and access to AEDs, nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. Mental health experts are urging parents to prioritize their kids' mental health this back-to-school season. Judith Ruiz Branch with the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
The end of summer can be filled with anxiety for some students preparing for a new academic year. Molly Shea with the Wisconsin chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness says stigma often makes it difficult to seek out assistance, but normalizing conversations about mental health can set kids up for success this school year.
For parents, it is important to have conversations with their children around mental health and mental illness so that we can start to normalize these discussions.
Nearly half of Wisconsin's female high school students report feeling sad and hopeless nearly every day, while male youth have high rates of suicide. Shea says NAMI Wisconsin's online back-to-school resources include a self-paced course designed to help parents and caregivers find out where to seek help and how to ask for assistance. She underscores the importance of early intervention and advises parents to consult their pediatrician or a school counselor if they notice their child has difficulty adjusting to new schedules. She also says intervention is necessary for unusual behavior like changes in sleeping, eating, or social habits.
When children and teens go back to school, that can bring a change in routine with new classes and new classmates and new teachers, and that environment can really impact mental health.
Dr. Nicole Brady, Chief Medical Officer for United Healthcare Student Resources, says if parents notice their children in serious distress or talking about self-harm, they should call or text the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline right away. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Find more news anytime at civicmedia.us.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly cloudy today, highs in the mid-80s. Some showers and storms by this afternoon. Showers and storms tonight, some heavy rainfall possible, lows around 68. Showers and storms for Sunday, a high around 82. Sunday night, scattered storms, some heavy rain, 67.
It's 79 degrees right now.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. Take a look back at the big sports events. The Packers kick off the preseason and the Brewers try to continue the winning streak, and a little news as well. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
News from the Center, WRCE. Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel. I am your host for this hour and also the next hour here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. As always, our commission this weekend, as it is virtually every weekend of the year, to bring you the top stories in the areas of rule of law and justice, and the delivery of that justice to the American people and arguably even beyond. Also analyzing that, helping you to understand, providing you with background and information about that in the context of that word, ami, amicus, friend of the court, friend of the people. And that is indeed what animates our discussion this weekend as well on our broadcast. Delighted and honored, as always, that you have chosen to spend some time with me and with my producer, Max, as we get through those major stories in the areas of government and rule of law. And yes, indeed, the aspiration for justice in America. We have, as always, an ambitious agenda, nonetheless achievable, as we get through our list of significant goings on in America, in our courts, in the streets and the highways of our nation this past week. We always invite you to be a part of that discussion here on Amicus. That telephone number that you can call to voice your questions, your inquiries, your comments, your observations about these various areas, these various rule of law stories. That phone number is 855-752-4842. Once again, that's 855-752-4842. We are also, of course, taking those same comments and questions and inquiries on our chat line here at Civic Media. Delighted once again that you would choose to not only participate as listeners, but also in the important discussions that we have about these issues. What are we going to be taking on this weekend on Amicus, a Law Review? The broad concept, the broad theory, the broad heading, if you will, for our discussion this weekend, trends, patterns that we are seeing in the administration of justice, both inside and outside the courts, inside the Department of Justice, outside the Department of Justice, among the people. What are we seeing in ways that the headlines may not completely capture? What are the kinds of things that are happening with respect to the judges and their relationships with the Department of Justice attorneys who appear in front of them? We've talked a lot about the petitions and the arguments, the motions, the memorandums filed with judges by the Department of Justice. We haven't talked a lot about the consequences of that. I'm going to talk about something called the presumption of regularity and how that has been compromised in recent months, the past 6 months in particular. We're going to talk also about judges increasingly defying the Supreme Court. We have suggested that in the past. We're going to codify much of that on this broadcast. Talk about also a concept called departmentalism and taking the concept and applying it here, arguably, to the decisions more and more of federal district court judges to break with the United States Supreme Court. Finally, we'll talk about the increasing lack of credibility among the public with respect to the Department of Justice generally. All of these things in the context of the fraying, the diminution of the rule of law, when all of these things begin to separate, begin to part from each other, they are plainly not together on a regular basis, nor should they be. Our system depends upon checks and balances and adversarial process. But when the basic understandings and the basic relationships between judges and litigants in front of them, between judges internal to the judiciary and the judges, the justices who are responsible for articulating broader issues of law, when the relationship between the public and the Department of Justice, the attorneys inside your Department of Justice, when all of that begins to crumble and fray, we've got problems even beyond the specific stories that illustrate all of that. And we are going to spend some time showing you and describing to you in all of those areas, once again, the ways in which the judges increasingly not relying upon the Department of Justice, the judges increasingly defying the Supreme Court, and the credibility loss among the public also from the Department of Justice no longer having the confidence and trust of the people of America. We're going to be talking about specific interests and specific illustrations of all of those. We're also going to be necessarily talking about the continuing injunctions issued by federal district judges. We'll talk about some arts funding. Yes, we'll talk about alligator Alcatraz. We're going to talk about birthright citizenship. Yes, again. And we're going to talk about a case coming out of Wisconsin, in particular, the Western District of Wisconsin, in which a judge, his name is William Conley, a federal district court judge, has issued a major ruling just this past week, like those others, but in a very different area. This one having to do with tribal rights and sovereignty and access to roads on one of our federally recognized tribes in the northern part of our state here of Wisconsin. We'll talk about all of those injunctions and the functions, once again, of our federal judiciary when it comes to deciding cases and instructing parties, litigants, sometimes the government, sometimes not, to do certain things, not do certain things. Some of those issued preliminarily, those are called temporary restraining orders. Some of them final in nature. We'll talk about all of those in the areas of the functions of federal judges when it comes to resolving issues. And finally, entering judgments, preliminary or final, directing parties to do or not do certain things. That's called injunctive relief. We're also going to be chatting about the president's further compromise of the faith and trust that the American public have in government generally, a whole series this past week of firings, specifically firings of people inside the Department of Justice. Once again, we have been animated in our discussion about a lot of those, some of those at the hands of a fellow named Emile Beauvais, going on now to be a Third Circuit Court of Appeals judge, some of those at the hands of Todd Blanche, our deputy attorney general, some of those at the hands of our Attorney General Pam Bondi, firing people inside the Department of Justice because of what they have done in the legitimate and fair and decent and assigned nature of their responsibilities. We'll talk in particular about what's happening just this past week at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It is important to remember that the FBI is not an independent agency. It is inside the structure and the administration of the Department of Justice. And that is why when three major senior officials of the FBI are fired, as they were just this past week, for their past participation in legitimate investigations that have resulted in charges and convictions and sentences, all of that supported by and checked by the basic systems of our investigative regime, how we go about prosecuting, investigating crimes, now being shown the door. We'll talk also about attacks similar upon the federal judiciary, an attack fairly recently against the now former chief judge of the U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia. His name is James Boasberg. He is still there. He is still administering cases there, presiding over things. We'll talk about in recent times the attack on him by the United States Department of Justice filing complaints, ethics complaints with a chief judge there in his district now. And we'll also talk about other attacks by the Department of Justice on other judges around the nation. What are they all doing? They're all entering judgments based upon the rule of law, based upon their assessment of the facts of the cases in front of them, applied to the laws that they know, that they see, that they are required to administer. Because of the results of the judgments that they are entering, they are drawing the attention, drawing the ire of our attorney general, certainly of our president as well. And the response by this Department of Justice has been to attack based upon their beliefs, unfounded, unsupported by what they're doing, that these judges have somehow gone, as the president often says, without authority, without power. They've gone rogue, so to speak, and for that reason need to be the subjects of ethics complaints and recommended findings against them, that they be removed from cases, that they be sanctioned, that they arguably be referred for larger investigations related to the ethical conduct of their positions. None of that well-founded. It is a part, plainly, of this administration's further attempt to stop those people. Retribution is the way that the president spoke about it during the campaign. It has come alive. It is real just in recent months and in the past week alone with respect to these firings inside the Department of Justice, with respect to these attempts to stop federal judges from doing their jobs by filing ethics complaints against them, each one of which is unfounded, no merit, frivolous. And then we'll also talk about another portion of this retribution campaign, the people who the president feels have wronged him. We'll talk about what the Department of Justice has initiated just this past week with respect to Letitia James. You may recall well that she is the attorney general of the state of New York, who has, yes, indeed, gotten a number of significant civil judgments entered by courts. She doesn't do this unilaterally. She's gotten civil judgments, including that major case involving by the president and his corporation. We'll talk about what the Department of Justice, plainly at the encouragement of this president, has done with respect to initiating, get this, a civil rights investigation of Letitia James, also going after some real estate issues. We'll talk about what the Department of Justice has also done in terms of retribution, at least attempts at retribution, against a sitting senator. His name, of course, coming out of the, he is the junior senator now of the state of California. And we'll talk about him and the focus by the Department of Justice on him as a result of the things that he has said and done in connection with his work now as a United States senator. His name, of course, Adam Schiff. You know that well. We'll talk as well about what the Department of Justice has done, again, in retribution, like the retribution against Letitia James, like the retribution against the senator from California, Adam Schiff, and also pursuing the former special counsel. And his name, Jack Smith, of course, he is the fellow who prosecuted those two cases against the president coming out of Mar-a-Lago and also coming out of January 6th. He dismissed those cases and is no longer a part of the government. We'll talk about the investigations, the referrals made as to him, to something called the Office of the Special Counsel. All of this a part of the retribution being undertaken by this president, by this Department of Justice, against people for their legitimate civil service conduct in the past, in the present, as a way of sending messages not only to them, but to others who might challenge appropriately in the conduct of their own checks and balances positions, sending messages to them, to all of us, that if you cross this president, you in fact indeed will be on the receiving end of investigative work. As we've often said, it doesn't require punishment. It does simply require an investigation. The investigations themselves, as we have often said on this broadcast, are indeed the punishment as well. We'll talk inside all of that as well, about another check and balance that we have begun to see out in California. And that is the actions and the work of grand juries in America, in this nation. All of that as Amicus Law Review continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. With Governor Tony Evers choosing not to run for a third term, that means we're going to have the first open race for governor in 16 years. We already know who some of the candidates will be. On the Democratic side, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez launched her campaign, and Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said he's running. On the Republican side, Washington County Executive Josh Shulman and Southeastern Wisconsin Business Executive Bill Berrien are running. Many more are expected to join the race. And it's not just governor that will have an open race. We could see open races for Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, and State Treasurer, too. Couple that with what's happening in the state legislature, no longer under gerrymandered maps, the year 2026 is going to bring a rather unique moment for voters in Wisconsin to determine the path forward on a fresh new era for the state. I know some can be wary of change, but let's embrace this as the real opportunity that it is.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Frank Anderson, who is the founder of Wisconsinology.com. You were great in the documentary. That's really exciting.
I'm really not as a documentary filmmaker because I get bored so quick. You have to really dig into your subject, and you got to show up every day, sometimes for years.
Yeah.
To let a story unfold or to find a story. I'm good for one day.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media this hour and next hour as well, taking your comments, your questions, not only in the chat line, but also on the phones. 855-752-4842 is that number. Join us. Be a part of our discussion here of all things related to government and the rule of law and the aspiration for justice in America. And it is indeed the aspiration for justice that prompts our first focus of this weekend. And that is the incarnation, the realization that the president, we've known this for a number of weeks, if not months, is now acting on his promise during the campaign of retribution. I will be your retribution. I will get after those people, those civil servants put in place not to do partisan things, not to do political things, but to do their jobs. And yes, indeed, sometimes they are checks and they are balances, and they include litigation. They include complaints. They include various things to ensure that our government works and that all of us are abiding by the rules and the standards and the principles upon which our nation has been governed. This past week and in previous weeks, a series of terminations of those people in many different areas, some of which we've commented upon, some of which are new just in recent times. The president responding to past actions and saying you are no longer a part of this government. We've talked a lot about those in the past. We begin with perhaps one of the most curious of them, and that is this matter involving the president removing the Internal Revenue Service chief after only 2 months of his tenure. Not a lot to say about this. His name is Billy Long. He's a former Republican congressman. He's no longer going to be serving as the tax agency's principal leader. The Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who you know well from lots of economic news, he's going to be overseeing the agency as the acting commissioner. Once again, a cabinet level person, a cabinet officer taking over when we have terminated a lower administrative agency person. Billy Long, again, he is being removed by the president from the position as the commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. It is more difficult to identify this necessarily as retribution because Mr. Long, upon leaving, certainly says an awful lot of good things about this president. He talks about him being it's an honor and a great service to provide to this president and the government. Excited to take on, he says, my new role as the ambassador to Iceland. He said, I'm thrilled to answer that call to service, deeply committed to advancing the bold agenda of this president. Exciting times ahead. Curious, we'll find out more about that, but the president begins our list here of those circumstances where he terminates people. This one in place for a whopping 2 months after being confirmed by the United States Senate for that position and now being replaced, at least temporarily, by our Treasury Secretary overseeing the IRS. No small position there. And the reason why, even though it may in the category of retribution, we don't know a whole lot about this. The reason why it is significant is you want stability, and that is the through line for this termination, as it is all the others we're about to talk about, all the other attacks on other individuals. You want to ensure that regardless of what they do, that their work is unfettered by the threat of unsupported and unjustified termination, sanction, and censure. They can, in fact, be removed if they engage in behavior that is contrary to the basic understandings about their jobs. That's called removal of civil servants for abuse of their positions. That is not what is going on in the great majority of these other circumstances. I could even say all of them. But Billy Long, the former Republican congressman in the IRS chief position for a couple months, no longer there, and presumably sending some messages to the Internal Revenue Service at an important time in our history about the stability at the top of that agency. Let's talk about some that are even more concerning and, frankly, downright troubling. Let's go to the Department of Justice. We have seen in the past these terminations of attorneys in many different areas. We have seen the terminations of assistant United States attorneys in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia, who were responsible for the prosecution, literally, of hundreds of cases against involving those January 6th rioters. Successful prosecutions in a whopping 95, 96, 97% of those cases, resulting in convictions by trials. Convictions in front of the courts of the District of Columbia. Virtually all of those assistant United States attorneys terminated, removed from their positions. Why? Because they were assigned the cases to do those prosecutions in the district court there in the District of Columbia. No longer a part of our federal workforce, not because they engaged in any activity or any conduct violative of the commission that that's given to them. Just the opposite. They did what they were told to do in terms of supporting justice, reaching the result of what the law and the facts commands and dictates. They're gone. We know as well that virtually all of Jack Smith's staff, also responsible for prosecuting, as you know well, that Mar-a-Lago case coming out of South Florida, the major January 6th prosecution, neither one of those going to trial, both of them dismissed before Donald Trump took office. We know that virtually all of the full-time civil service staff that was working with Jack Smith has been terminated as well. Others, including the acting U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. We'll get back to that issue in connection with a larger concern about the judiciary in our second hour. We have seen this across the board with respect to other people inside the Department of Justice, movements and transfers and departures, as we have talked about, of people inside the Department of Justice who are no longer able to live up to their oath of office, to meet the ends of justice, to promote the interests of government and the interests, most importantly, of the people of the United States of America. We've got more of them coming out of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Yes, an agency of the Department of Justice. The FBI director, Kash Patel, as are all FBI directors, responsible to the attorney general. She is Kash Patel's boss. This is inside the FBI. The FBI just this past week removing at least three senior officials involved in cases connected with January 6th of 2021. And we'll talk about all of that, and what happened with those three as Amicus, a law review, continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Previewing his meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, President Trump suggested that Russia and Ukraine may swap territory to end the war. Ukraine's leaders now speaking up, says ABC's Selena Wang.
Ukraine's Zelensky rejecting the suggestion of swapping territory, saying in a statement overnight, Ukraine is ready for real solutions that can bring peace. Any solutions that are against us, any solutions that are without Ukraine, are at the same time solutions against peace. Critics calling the summit a gift to Putin, accusing him of stalling as the war drags on.
The Trump-Putin meeting will take place Friday in Alaska. No motive yet has been released for the man who authorities say opened fire outside of CDC headquarters in Atlanta Friday. A DeKalb County, Georgia police officer was killed. The man has been identified as a 30-year-old suburban Atlanta resident who was found dead at the scene. This is ABC News.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
It's the Packers and the Jets. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Lambeau Field, where the Packers play their first of three preseason games tonight against the Jets. New York has a new head coach, Aaron Glenn, who says his quarterback, Justin Fields, and others are improving on offense.
That group in the back end is doing a hell of a job. And the other thing that we've been preaching, just emotional maturity. When things go bad, man, listen, this is a tough game, and things don't always happen as crisp as you want it, but you always got to get it out your mind and go on to the next play, and our guys did a good job of doing it.
Matt LaFleur says he's trying to remind players not to lose focus on what they've been taught on the practice field to across the street inside 1265 Lombardi Avenue.
One of the things that was good with, like, family night, first time being in front of that many people, and it's interesting to see how people don't always take what they've been training across the street into Lambeau. It's just another opportunity for these guys.
Baseball, the Brewers host the Mets tonight. Milwaukee winning a thriller last night, 3-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly cloudy today, highs in the mid-80s. Some showers and storms by this afternoon. Showers and storms tonight, some heavy rainfall possible, lows around 68. Showers and storms for Sunday, a high around 82. Sunday night, scattered storms, some heavy rain, 67.
Right now, it's 80.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I didn't know what the hell Malort was, so here now, our own Carol, head of traffic, she's brought in Malort. Down the hatch, cheers to Malort. Now, it went down
fairly smooth, but the back end is ridiculously terrible. Judas Priest, that's terrible.
Once is enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like my time with women.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, if you feel like you missed out on the weekend news, no worries. Civic Media's Charlie Pittman, news director, will join us to keep us updated. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel. We are spending much of this first hour of our weekend broadcast talking about the president's retribution, much of that coming at the hands of the attorney general, getting rid of those people inside the Department of Justice, attacking people now outside the Department of Justice, attacking judges as well. Let's talk about what happened just this past week with respect to three senior people at the FBI. We know that the former FBI acting director, Brian Driscoll, you may recall him. He was much in the news in the interim period between the departure of the prior director and the appointment of Kash Patel. He, of course, was in charge of the of much of the action and involvement of the Department of Justice on a regular basis. Brian Driscoll served as the acting director, again, of the FBI during this very important time period. He revealed his firing in an email to employees, as reported by a lot of the media. He said this. He said, "Last night I was informed that tomorrow will be my last day in the FBI. I understand that you may have a lot of questions regarding why, for which I currently have no answers," he said. "No cause has been articulated at this time. Please know," Driscoll went on to say, "that it has been the honor of my life to serve alongside each of you. Thank you for allowing me to stand on your shoulders throughout it all. Our collective sacrifices for those we serve is, as always, has been worth it," he says. "I regret nothing. You are my heroes, and I remain in your debt." The comments by him, again, shown the door, again, because of his prior involvement in many ways in the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot investigation and other matters, showing once again the consequences when, in fact, these decisions are made not based upon performance, based upon civil service, but based upon political animus. You lose good people like Driscoll. He had undeniably come under fire from the Trump administration earlier this year after he was pushing back against pressure to oust those agents who had handled those Capitol riot cases. He said, "No, we should not be doing this." And he was fired just short of his retirement, and therefore is not able to collect a full pension, something we've also seen at the hands of this president in his first term. People described Driscoll as a well-respected leader inside the FBI, recipient of the FBI Medal of Valor and the FBI Shield of Bravery, no longer a part of the Federal Bureau of Investigation because of his involvement in the investigation of the riot, the insurrection in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. There is a second individual. We also know who that is. His name is Walter Giardina. Walter Giardina. And Giardina was involved in the contempt of Congress case. You may recall this against the White House aide, that trade advisor. His name is Peter Navarro. He's back now in the White House. You may recall well that Navarro was served 4 months
in federal prison. Why? Because he failed to comply with a congressional subpoena. He was charged, he was tried, he was convicted and sentenced. He is a convicted felon, and he is back in the White House now. Giardina was involved in that particular investigation and that prosecution. For his work on that legitimate matter, Giardina had been in the crosshairs, if you will, of Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley. He's from Iowa, as you know. He had said on the Senate floor at one point that the case against Navarro was the work of a merry band of partisans. And then we have a third person also let go by the FBI just this past week. His name is Steve Jensen. He's the acting director in charge of the Washington field office in particular. And Jensen as well, helming that Washington field office, also believed to have been involved in the Bureau's investigation of the Capitol riot. All of them let go, not providing us with any information about the reasons why, other than to say that they are no longer there and that they are plainly, unmistakably losses to the FBI, to the Department of Justice, to all of us, good and decent, long tenured civil servants, leaving those positions and diminishing the significance, the importance, the gravity of what the FBI can and should be doing. Their absence will be sorely felt. A part of the retribution of this Department of Justice acting on behalf of this White House and this president to go after those people who legitimately investigated these various matters, no longer in those senior areas. And while we have spoken about this in the past, it is important to focus upon it once again. And that is this, that when you dismiss these people, you lose not only the huge, huge amount of experience that they have, but you also lose the expertise that they bring to their investigative work. And presumably people will take those positions, presumably people who will not run afoul of the leadership in the FBI, in the White House. You want people, as we've discussed before, you want people to look inside the Department of Justice, inside the FBI, inside the government generally, and say, you know what, I'd like to articulate a differing view. I'd like to push back on our plans to do X, Y, or Z. That is a good and healthy thing for government. And we'd like to think that those people who are assigned responsibility to handle these important cases would be given the ability to do so, absent this kind of retributive behavior. That's happening inside the FBI. And we know as well that it extends beyond just the Department of Justice. We have talked a lot in the past about James Boasberg, the former chief judge of the U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia. He is no longer the chief justice judge there, not because of any impropriety, but because those terms expire. But in recent weeks, the Department of Justice has filed a petition with the chief judge, the new chief judge in that district, claiming that Judge Boasberg, for his activities, for his statements, and in particular, a statement made during the course of an internal non-public meeting of the Judicial Conference of the United States, in which the judge at that point warned about some disregard of the rulings of federal courts that he sees coming up, and the triggering of a constitutional crisis, saying these things inside an internal meeting of a group of judges and justices called the Judicial Conference of the United States, overseeing the administration of the federal courts, making those comments now made public and prompting the Attorney General to file with the court an ethics complaint. Plainly, the ethics complaint as to Boasberg, targeted because he did, in fact, continues to administer that major case involving the deportees, those who were on March 15th and following deported without due process to El Salvador. We've talked about that a lot. The attempts by that judge to get information and to oversee that case, notwithstanding the stonewalling by the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice, the White House, plainly dissatisfied with the work of this separate Article III judge, and so filing this frivolous complaint against him for making improper public comments. Now, the reason why that is so vacuous, The reason why there's no there is these were not public complaints, number one. And number two, there's nothing about a judge or a justice in the context of another meeting with other judges and justices talking about trends that they see in the administration of their work. We want them to do that. That's what they are encouraged to do so that they can, yes, indeed, be prepared, be understanding of what the climate and the geography is like out there. And that's exactly what Judge Boasberg said in warning of rulings of federal courts and the possibility that that may trigger a constitutional crisis. Nonetheless, the attorney general just in recent weeks seeking to have him sanctioned to be removed from the case involving the deportees, to being told that he cannot engage in this kind of discussion, and also being referred to the judicial conference to consider removing him, or at least seeking his removal through the impeachment process. These are no small things. It is an attack, undeniably, against a sitting federal judge for the things that he, in this instance and in all of these cases, has done as a part of the assignment we gave him as a federal district court judge. We know that there are others in this same vein. In February, the Justice Department filed a similar misconduct complaint against a judge who is overseeing a challenge to Trump's ban on transgender people in the military. Recall this well. The Department of Justice at that time, as the judge imposed initially the ban, it was subsequently lifted by the Supreme Court. The administration saying that the judge who said no, it is a violation of civil rights, can't do this, Mr. President, cannot remove transgender military people. And the president comes back and says that that behavior, the behavior of the judge, is hostile and egregious misconduct. Hostile and egregious misconduct, justifying a misconduct complaint against her. Last month, it sued, as you recall well, a whole group, the entire group of Maryland judges in the district court there, accusing them of intruding on the president's inherent powers at the time to enforce the nation's immigration laws, suing the entire bench, pushing back on what they have done to try to ensure due process in terms of the administration of the law and the granting of due process to those people facing deportation. Earlier this month, again, the attorney general accusing members of the federal bench in New Jersey of being rogue judges. Those are her words, rogue judges. During a fight, again, we haven't talked a lot about this. It's been out there in the news about who would be the state's next acting and ultimately confirmed U.S. attorney. We know that that has now been resolved by the Senate in confirming the president's selection there. Along the way, the attorney general saying that the judges there, in terms of their appointment and the process which is prescribed for them to do under the law, that they're being rogue. They're rogue judges. And for that reason, they should receive and be the receiving end of our disapproval. All of that happening at the hands of our attorney general, these complaints, these attacks upon federal district court judges for doing their jobs. Plainly, the president in other areas has also referred to them in descriptive language and has also suggested that they are without power, that they are judges that are not doing the jobs assigned to them. All of that reasons for great concern here in this time in American history. It is, of course, appropriate, as we often do under the First Amendment, to respond to and even criticize, if we feel strongly, the decisions of federal judges, district court judges, appellate court judges. What we don't do is engage in the name calling. What we don't do is suggest that because they have a view that is articulated, for that reason, they need to be reviewed. And they need to be the subject of these ethics complaints. They need to be sanctioned and they need to be told to knock it off, to stop doing what they are required to do under their oath of office, their own commitment to the United States Constitution. We've got more of that as well, and it leaves in many ways Washington, D.C. in part and stays there in part. The Justice Department, again, just this past week, continuing this retribution movement, escalating the pressure this time upon Letitia James. You remember Caldwell? She is the attorney general and plainly an adversary of the president in many pieces of litigation. We have talked about a lot of those. The Department of Justice this past week opening, get this, a civil rights investigation as to her in her office and appointing a special prosecutor to scrutinize her real estate dealings. Those developments concerning the James behavior, their conduct, all that kind of thing, again, a part of this dramatic escalation by this administration against anyone who has done their job and pursued, in this case, civil litigation. When we come back, we'll talk more about what Letitia James did and did not do. And then we'll also talk about what Adam Schiff apparently did or did not do, again, to draw the ire of this president and this administration here on Amicus, a law review.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show.
Laura McCoy, she is a member of the Green Bay School Board.
In the 1990s, revenue caps were put into place, and Green Bay was a conservative, low-spending district. Mm-hmm. We've been struggling with that basically ever since. The people in our community have stepped up again and again to pass referendums. That's wonderful, but we need that per-pupil increase. We need the cash to keep the lights on, basically, and to pay our staff what they deserve.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center. We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center. We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center. Baseball on the radio is a tradition we're very happy to continue. Catch the Brewers all season long on WRCE FM 107.7 and AM 1450 in Richland Center.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
My name is Jim Santel. This is Amicus, a law review. We are talking in this principal first hour of our weekend broadcast all about the consequences of terminating, firing, seeking retribution, seeking the issuance of ethics orders against various people who you do not like, who have done things in the exercise of their duties and responsibilities that run afoul of your particular views about what should happen. Those views, of course, the views of the president, arguably of the attorney general as well. well. We talked about these complaints, these ethics complaints issued as to various federal judges doing things the president does not like in stopping various of his executive orders. Perhaps the top of the list, this ethics complaint as to James Boasberg, saying that he's undermined the integrity and impartiality of the judiciary by talking in a non-public review and discussion with other judges about some concerns he's seen with respect to the compliance of the government with court orders, something that in fact has come true indeed in his own court, in the courts of those other judges, all now on the receiving end of ethics complaints. We have seen this across the board. We see this as well, not only with respect to judges, but also prosecutors inside the Department of Justice, the firing of those folks. We see it now with respect to the firing of senior level people inside the FBI doing their jobs as good civil servants. Losses of their experience, their expertise, profound, cannot be replaced quickly, and therefore compromising the expertise, the capacity of the FBI, the elite investigative agency of our nation, to do its job. Now we have these additional attacks upon Letitia James, who, again, not inside the federal government. She is a state agent, a state officer. She is the attorney general of the state of New York. And, of course, she is the individual, this officer, who has brought a number of lawsuits against Donald Trump, all of them successfully. And the Justice Department escalating pressure on her by saying that they're initiating a civil rights investigation and saying to her, basically, they're going to determine whether or not you violated the president's civil rights, the other civil rights of other people, arguably, for in pursuing these investigations, whether or not the attorney general violated civil rights in her successful civil fraud lawsuit against Donald Trump. And all of that, again, coming out of the Department of Justice. Apparently, it appears that the Department of Justice, through the acting U.S. attorney in New York, has sent a couple of subpoenas to Attorney General James' office, one of which was related to the civil fraud case. And the notion that somehow that was a product of a civil rights violation. Second one involving the attorney general's long-running case against the National Rifle Association. The attorney general there had sued the organization, you may recall, back in 2020, winning the ouster of the longtime leader there and diminishing its power significantly. All of that happening again at the hands of our attorney general. She has also appointed Ed Martin. You may recall Ed Martin, the unsuccessful one-time acting U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, now inside the Department of Justice, reviewing all these attempts, according to the president, to weaponize the Department of Justice. None of that based upon anything serious. Ed Martin is now being appointed as a special prosecutor to supervise these ongoing investigations into Letitia James' real estate dealings, according to some reliable reporting. Of course, all of this is just blatant. It is an example of this administration's political retribution, which is what the president promised during the course of his campaign. We also know that Ed Martin is investigating the real estate transactions of Senator Adam Schiff, who is a Democrat, as you know, of California. He's another high-profile person who has been speaking against the president and many of the things that he has done. The senator from California plainly attracting the ire of the president for various statements that he has made in connection with many of these executive orders. Now Ed Martin apparently investigating Adam Schiff for real estate transactions, and in particular, probably the result of the senator's objection to Ed Martin's nomination to be the permanent U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia. That was also spearheaded by Senator Schiff as a part of what? As a part of his duties and responsibilities as a United States senator. People can disagree about those things. We ask staff of the Congress, we ask senators on all sides of the political aisle to voice their views about the legitimacy and the qualifications and the merits of candidates before the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's what was going on here. That gets you, under this administration, an investigation into your conduct, in particular focusing upon real estate transactions that presumably have little, if anything, to do with that conduct. Should those matters be a part of the public understanding? Of course they should. And if there's something untoward there, if there's something illegal there, they should be investigated. No indication that there is a basis to believe that there is anything untoward, illegal going on there. And that also underscores one of the final points in all this, which is traditionally the Department of Justice does not announce investigations, specifically if they're grand jury investigations, if they involve subpoenas, those kinds of things. Many good reasons for not doing this. This administration, once again, breaking the norms across the board, announcing not only the conduct of these investigations, providing focus to them, issuing subpoenas that are also apparently in the public domain, all of that contrary to the ways in which the Department of Justice has worked in the past, but also a part of the attacks of the Department of Justice on these various public officials inside the FBI, inside the judiciary, outside these agencies, because in the past they have done things that are contrary to the views and the positions of the White House. This is retribution incarnate. When we come back, we're going to talk about federal district court judges, more of them out there issuing injunctions. And I'm going to spend a lot of time in our second hour talking about the collateral consequences of all of this on the rule of law in America. Stay with us for all of that and more.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Georgia Bureau of Investigations identified Friday's suspected shooter outside of the Centers for Disease Control and Emory University. 30-year-old Patrick Joseph White of Kennesaw, Georgia. A DeKalb County police officer was killed in the shooting. ABC's Faith Abube has more.
According to the CDC, at least four of its buildings were shot in the attack. Adding in a statement, our top priority is the safety and well-being of everyone at CDC. We are actively coordinating with federal, state, and local partners to fully investigate the shooter and this tragic crime.
The shooter was found dead nearby. President Trump will meet in Alaska Friday with Russia's Vladimir Putin. Ukraine will not have a representative there. Today, Ukrainian President Zelensky said any peace deal, not including Ukraine, would lead to, quote, dead solutions. The Texas Attorney General's filed a lawsuit seeking to remove the Democratic House members who left the state to deny a quorum. This is ABC News.